January 18, 2011, in Chennai. Multimedia presentation on coming to the mode of goodness. Okay, are we ready? Yes? So we're going to tonight meditate on what binds us and what frees us. Does everybody here understand English? Do we need any translation? Is there anyone you don't want to? I'll probably knock those over if you put them right there. Is there anyone who needs any translation at all? So, Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita that the three modes of material nature are acting like ropes. It's just like if you have a rope and you tie three strands together, then it's much stronger. So these three modes of nature are fully binding us in this world. So why should we know about the modes? What does it matter? How will it help us? So this is because the modes affect pretty much everything you do. Krishna says there's nobody who's free from these modes. It affects the choices that we make, our health. It even affects how we interpret the world, how we see the world. I was explaining the other day, as like, you know, a cow sees grass as food, but we don't see grass as food. Right? A pig sees garbage as food, or a goat sees garbage as food. So what we perceive as being favorable and unfavorable depends on what kind of covering that we have. So we all would like to make good choices, right? It's one of the hardest things in life. My daughter called me today and she said, Mata, I can't decide, should I go to the arangetram of my friend's sister or should I go to the retreat? Which one should I do? They're both on the same date. So we all have choices like that constantly throughout our lives. Do I come to this program? Do I leave 5 minutes later? And we don't even know what's a big choice and what's a little choice. We might think, well, the really big choice is who I marry or what kind of degree I have or what kind of job I have. But you don't know. Getting in your car 5 minutes later may mean you get in an accident. So maybe that was the big choice. So in order to make the kind of choices that bring us the life that we want, we have to have the least amount of covering over our vision. So I saw a really funny sign from, I forget what state it was in India, that was advertising for road safety. And it showed an actual photograph of some man on a motorcycle. And you know, often when people ride a motorcycle, they tie a cloth over their nose and mouth to protect from the dust. So he was tying the cloth on while he was driving, and as he was putting the cloth down, it covered his eyes. So when we're covered by the modes of passion, ignorance is exactly like that. You're trying to make choices and drive through life with this very thick covering. And you can see the less of a covering you have, the more you can make decisions that will be for your benefit. So here's Krishna summarizing the influence of the modes of material nature. Scientists are looking for a unified field theory, some basic principle of reality that they can write on a t-shirt. They haven't found it yet. And here Krishna is explaining this is a basic principle of reality. You know, so some of you have studied math and science. We have many mathematicians and scientists here, correct? So can you guarantee that the laws of mathematics as we know them operate the same way on Mars as they do on the Earth? We don't even know how they operate on Earth. What to speak of in the rest of the universe? Can we really say that two parallel lines will never meet at the end of the universe? We don't know. But here Krishna is telling us that the modes of material nature are operating everywhere in the universe. And these modes are controlling us. They're changing our perception. They're affecting our desires. They're affecting how we see ourselves, how we see others, what we want in life, what we think is pleasurable, what we think is painful. So a summary of the modes. In the 14th chapter, Krishna gives a summary of the modes. And then, especially in the 17th and 18th chapter, he goes into more details. So the mode of goodness, there's a feeling of happiness and knowledge. There's a feeling of joy. If you can think of some time when you felt just really joyful and exuberant, very light in both the senses of the English word. So the English word light has two meanings, like the opposite of darkness and the opposite of heavy. So a time that you felt very light in weight and full of light, full of understanding. So that's the influence of the mode of goodness. Things become clear. Oh, it's like this. Oh, I understand this. Oh, everything is so simple. And the mode of passion. Now, this is very important to understand the mode of passion. I think that the mode of passion is the least understood of the modes of material nature. The mode of passion externally may not look that different from the mode of goodness, but the consciousness is very different. In the mode of passion, we're very goal-oriented or future-oriented. We're working for some fruitive result, hence the idea of the carrot. You're focused on the fruits. In the mode of goodness, you're very focused on the present, on the illumination of the present, the joy of the present. You know, in the spiritual world, there's only the present time. You all know that, right? So in the mode of passion, that means, and the first aspect of material creation is? Anyone know what the first thing? It's time. The glance of Mahavishnu, which is Lord Shiva, is time, Mahakal. So this concept of past, present, and future, it doesn't exist in the spiritual world. It's not part of ultimate reality. It's the beginning of illusion. And the mode of passion, one is very focused on the future. When I finish my degree, then I will enjoy. When I have my wedding, I will enjoy. When I buy my first house, then I will enjoy. When I have a child, I will enjoy. When my child gets into the best school, then I will enjoy. When my children finally graduate and I can finish paying off my bills, then I will enjoy. You know? When I get a good job, then I will enjoy. When I can retire, then I will enjoy. When I buy this new computer, then I will enjoy. When I buy this new car, then I will enjoy. So the enjoyment is always in the future. It's always in the future. And we have this idea of enjoyment based on myself as the controller and the doer. We're thinking in terms of, if I do this and this and this, I will get a certain result and then I will enjoy. So what's the problem with this mentality? Most of the time, are you working for a result or enjoying the result? Most of the time, you're working for a result. When you get the result, first of all, can you guarantee that your work will give the result?
No.
No. Okay, so most of the time you're working for a result, so you're not happy. You're hoping that you'll be happy. And because you can't guarantee the result, you also have a lot of fear and anxiety. Then when you get the result, is it always what you wanted? No. So sometimes even when you get the result, you're not happy. And if you get the result and it is what you wanted, then what happens very quickly?
Next goal.
You go to the next goal. So that means it's long periods of anxiety and working hard and fear and struggle with a few minutes, maybe, of happiness, or maybe not. And then planning for another goal. So it's mostly distress, punctuated with some occasional, brief feelings of accomplishment. So this is the mode of passion. The mode of happiness is a constant feeling of satisfaction and joy and happiness. It's not dependent on results or thinking that you are the doer. Okay, the mode of ignorance is pretty easy to understand. So in the mode of ignorance, you don't care about results, you're not working hard, but nor are you happy and illuminated. You're dull. You know, you're just, that's a real sign, by the way, from China. So in the mode of ignorance, you don't really care. In the mode of goodness, you're very determined, but not for results. In the mode of passion, you're very determined, thinking I'm the doer and I'm going to get results. In the mode of ignorance, your only determination is to sleep, maybe to cheat others, to take intoxication. Mode of ignorance, you're always looking for the easy way. In goodness and passion, you're willing to take a lot of difficulty and austerity. In the mode of ignorance, you want everything easy, fast, cheap, low quality. You're looking for some immediate happiness. Mode of goodness, you have immediate, constant happiness. Mode of ignorance, you're looking for immediate happiness, but in nasty ways. In nasty ways. So why should we be interested in the mode of goodness? There's a very nice purport, where Srila Prabhupada is explaining that Krishna's ready. Right? He's ready to talk to us, he's ready to advise us, he's ready. Thank you. Do you want to clap or not? You want to make up your mind? So he wants to see us, he wants to talk to us, he wants to advise us. Just like some of us here have grown-up children. Who here has grown-up children? Who here has grown children? Okay, so you know when you have grown children, you're always ready to give them advice. But they're not always ready to listen. And all of us have parents, right? Everybody has parents. So you know your parents are always ready to give you advice.
Always.
Always. Especially Indian parents.
The 50-year-old man, when we went to make member, he said, I should ask my father's permission.
I have to ask my father permission.
When
he's 50 years old.
Hare Krishna. 75 years.
Father said, I have to ask my permission before I can be a member. I remember my brother-in-law was visiting me at the New York temple. He lived in another city, and he was visiting his home city where his mother lived. So he came to the Sunday feast, and he said, if I don't get back to my mother's place on time, she'll worry that I'm out late. He said, I'm already 45, you know, I've been taking care of myself for so many years. But she'll call me and say, are you coming home? Did you remember your sweater? So Krishna actually has good advice. So I don't know if I should say this. Parents don't always have good advice. But Krishna always has good advice, and he's eager to help us. He's eager to give us the truth. So why do we not hear Krishna? That depends on how we're receptive. And Prabhupada specifically says that that depends on how much we're in sattva gun, how much we're in goodness. The more we're in goodness, the more we can see Krishna, the more we can hear Krishna. You can think about the modes, as I said in the beginning, as the how opaque. Do you all know what opaque means?
Yes.
Closed. Not transparent.
Yes. So we have 3 degrees. We have transparency, translucency, and opaque. Do you all know those English terms? So transparent means like a regular glass window. Translucent is like a bathroom window. Sometimes they put a window in a...
Hazy.
You can see light, but you can't see shapes very well. And then opaque is like a wall.
Locked.
Or like you close the curtains. So really there's only one material nature, but material nature appears to the degree of covering. Or you can think about water. Water is water, but it can be steam, water, or ice. So material nature can be in one of 3 states. Like water can be in 3 states. So with the mode of goodness, it's like steam. Or like a transparent window. In the mode of passion, it's like water. Or like a translucent window. In the mode of ignorance, it's like ice. Or like an opaque wall, or nearly opaque. And of course, this is a continuum. So obviously, the closer you are to transparency, because Krishna is everywhere. Mayatatamidam sarvam. Krishna is everywhere. He's in everything. And antarasta paramanu antarastam. He's in every atom. He's in our heart. Why can't we see him? Because we have a wall over our eyes. So the cleaner, I say cheta darpana marginam, to clean this mirror. The clearer it can be, the more Krishna can reciprocate with us. If I have my fingers in my ears, then if you're talking to me, I can't hear you very well. So therefore, if we want to reciprocate with Krishna, we want to come to sattva guna. All right, what is the destination? So if you die in sattva gun, then you will either be, depending on how much sattva gun, because remember it's a continuum, you'll be born on earth as a poet or a scientist. This is all from Bhagavad Gita, the verses and Prabhupada's purports. I don't put all the references up, but you can find these all directly in the Bhagavad Gita. I'm not making this up. So you'll either take birth as a poet or a scientist, or you'll go to the planets of the devas in the mode of passion, a human body. And the Prabhupada says if you're purely in the mode of passion, or very strongly in the mode of passion, you'll get a lot of power and wealth. You'll be a very rich person or king. In the mode of ignorance, you'll take birth as an animal or on the lower planets. Who do they worship? So in goodness, people worship the demigods. Or sometimes it says those in the mode of goodness worship Brahman. In passion, people worship demons, like a lot of politicians. And not all politicians are demons. Right? Or some rock and roll stars. Again, not all rock and roll stars are demons. I'm not saying that. Some devotees play rock and roll, Krishna conscious music. But people in the mode of passion, they worship somebody who's wants to enjoy the world, who's very expert at enjoying the world, and those in ignorance worship ghosts and spirits. They worship lower beings. Now, when we say worship, we don't mean you get out an arati lamp. Could be. But that's not exactly what we mean. We mean, who do you respect? Who do you look up to? Who do you want to emulate? Who are the heroes in society? So we can see modern society is mostly in passion ignorance. That most of the heroes of modern society are people who are interested in fruitive results or people interested in cheating, immediate mode of ignorance, pleasures.
It happens in Tamil Nadu. They worship the film heroes, do abhishek to their
They actually do the, to the posters.
To the posters. They pour milk on the posters.
Then the posters disintegrate.
They have the plastic poster.
Oh, plastic poster. Okay. Fireproof poster.
And the big aarti is done. Coconut is broken. Garland is put. And big...
You know, there's many wonderful things about India. Many, many wonderful things. But some things about India are a little peculiar. So I've seen Indians do aarti for cars.
Donkeys.
Okay, no further comment on that. So I know in India you all think you're much better than us white people. And in many ways you are, but I tell you something, in America we do not worship donkeys. And we don't even worship our politicians in America. I've never seen. But this idea who is the hero? Who's the hero? So in modern society, mostly the entertainers, right? The singers, the dancers, and most of them are very degraded people. You know, they get divorced and married 5 times, and 5 children by this one, and 2 children by this one.
Alcoholics,
drug addicts. Right? Sports heroes also, they're many times addicted to intoxicants, and they don't have a very good lifestyle. Politicians, I mean, there are some honest politicians, we're not criticizing. Maharaj Yudhishthira was a politician. We're not criticizing politicians. But many of the politicians are cheaters, right? And these people they're worshipped by the people. This is my hero. I want to be like that. Okay, so food and the motive goods. Really nice quote here by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. This is from his purport to food and the motive goodness. So if you can see the mode of goodness, remember we talked about it's full of joy and light. So food in the mode of goodness, it brings you a feeling of satisfaction. You know, I noticed the sweets you made for pongal, the rice and jaggery.
Chakra pongal.
Ah. So when I first had it, I thought it was like suji halva when I just saw it. And the devotees put some on my plate. I thought, oh no, now I will just sleep, you know. And I tasted it. It was so light. It felt like you were getting energy, you know, or you drink the coconut milk and you feel energized. The most wonderful prasadam I ever had was in Bengal. Some devotees had made preparations all according to Ayurveda. And all of the ingredients were locally grown, fresh picked, organic, locally grown, all cooked according to Ayurveda and served according to Ayurveda. So not only what part of the leaf it was on, but what order they served. And they would serve only one thing at a time. And you had to take as much as you wanted of that one thing, then the next thing. And it was a big meal, but after the meal, I felt very energized. I didn't feel tired. I felt like I had life and I was nourished. So that's food in the mode of goodness. And as you go on in Krishna consciousness, you'll notice more and more what mode food is in. You'll be able to tell. It's like you can tell, this food is healthy for me. This food is good for me. It's giving me life. And after a while, you won't like to eat other kinds of food that make you feel sort of like, ugh. You know, this is dead food, pleasing to the heart. Right? It's very pleasing to eat this sort of food. Okay, so passion, you see the too much something, too much salt, too much bitter, too much sour, too much spicy. You know, now there's no taste in the food, it's only fire. And it causes distress. So this basically is just too much. Like the man in the mode of passion, he's not satisfied with one core. He's got to have 10 cores. Then he's not satisfied with 10 cores. He's got to have 12 cores. He's not satisfied with 3-story house. He's got a 5-story house. He's not satisfied with what he can earn working 8 hours. He's got to work 10 hours. So with food also, it's like that. Now, too much sugar. Right? So many people now, they have diabetes. It's a problem all over the world. Too much sugar. Too much, too much. So, mode of passion, it's not moderate. It's not balanced. Now, we often think, even in our language, bigger, up, more, makes it good. More people, bigger space, higher this, more of that. But actually, balance is good. So mode of passion is always bigger, bigger, more, more, more. Of course, we can always want more and more for Krishna. That's another thing. So the mode of goodness, mode of ignorance, rather, is old. Right? It's old. There's no taste. It's decomposing. Nasty. Right? So from the mode of passion, we have bad effects in this life. From the mode of ignorance, we suffer in this life and in the next. So, of course, prasadam then is above the modes of nature. That's an illustration from one of our children's books. Then there's different kinds of sacrifice. Now, it's interesting that in goodness and passion, you'll see this pattern as we go through this, that the externals of goodness and passion are often very, very similar. So a person doing a sacrifice in the mode of passion and a person doing a sacrifice in the mode of goodness, it looks the same, but the motive is different. The person's heart is different.
You know,
what's driving them? The person in passion wants everyone to recognize them. Now, this sacrifice doesn't just mean having a fire jagya. It doesn't just mean homa. It means anytime we sacrifice, we're all sacrificing. Right? You have to sacrifice, if you're a housewife, to feed your family a good meal. You have to sacrifice to take good care of your children. You have to sacrifice to maintain the temple. Everybody had to sacrifice to come here tonight, unless you live downstairs. So there's always some sacrifice involved. How can you do anything without sacrifice? Even the person in the mode of ignorance has to make some sacrifices. So what's driving your sacrifices? First of all, what kind of sacrifices are you doing? Are you doing a sacrifice according to the Shastra, or are you making up your sacrifice? Like sometimes we see devotees, they're neglecting their family for the sake of service. So where is this in the Shastra? Yeah? For my husband, he just has to eat khichdi. When some guest comes, then I make 15 preparations. So that's not in the Shastra. That's just something concocted. People often ask me, what should I do about this or that? And the first thing I always answer is, what does it say in the Shastra? Sometimes the Shastra, Shastra doesn't give every detail about everything. But what does it say in the Shastra? People ask me, household life, should we have children? I said, well, what does it say in the Shastra? So that's the first thing. Are the sacrifices I'm making, are they coming from Shastra, or are they coming from some advertisement, or are they coming from some demoniac propaganda? Where is it coming from? Without remuneration to the priest. I'm going to talk about this for a minute, because this is a big controversy in ISKCON. It's 7:15 in the morning. So, I was once talking to some researcher who was asking, do you have any traditional guidelines about what workers must be paid, what workers must be volunteer, and what workers can be paid or volunteer? So we know that the brahmanas, kshatriyas, and vaishyas are not supposed to work for a fixed salary. And that doesn't mean that the brahmins, kshatriyas, and vaishyas starve. It just means that they're not working for a fixed salary. Does that make sense? Do you know what's the problem with working for a fixed salary?
They become slaves.
Why? Why does a fixed salary specifically do that?
exploited?
I'm sorry? You have a very clear expectation, and therefore you build your life around that expectation. You start getting fixed expenses. And when you have fixed expenses, you feel, okay, I need a fixed income. And then you're very much afraid, if I lose my fixed income, what will happen to all my fixed expenses? And your ability to be truthful, your ability to follow Dharma becomes compromised. Because you're more interested in maintaining your salary than in following your Dharma. So that's why the three higher castes are not supposed to work for a fixed salary. The Vaishya is supposed to generate their own income through farming, through trade, through cow protection, through some means of honest wealth that comes from the land or from nature, from the land, from the water, from the animals. The Vaishyas are supposed to generate honest wealth. The Kshatriyas are supposed to generate wealth from taxes or rent, Prabhupada says. So in other words, you have property, you're providing a service, and people are paying for that service. And the Brahmanas are supposed to, they can sometimes provide services like astrology or medicine, but they're supposed to live on whatever people kindly give them. So that means that you have to give them something. So sometimes in ISKCON we say, nobody should ever pay the Brahmanas. If you don't pay the Brahmanas, my friend, how are they going to live? So therefore, charity must be given to the Brahmanas. And if you have a sacrifice where you don't give any charity to the Brahmanas, to the person who helped you in that sacrifice, then that sacrifice is also in the mode of ignorance. So sometimes we have educational programs. We have some schools set up in ISKCON where people pay a fee to attend, and none of that money goes to the teachers. And they'll say, well, the teachers aren't supposed to be paid. Well, how are they supposed to get their rice and chapatis? No, it doesn't make any sense. How are they supposed to buy their toothpaste? At least give them toothpaste or something. So I see that this culture is stronger among the Indians than the non-Indians, this concept. But it's something that I'd like to see us really focus on in ISKCON, of taking care of people who are Brahmanas. When I was on the train coming here, there was one family who's working Brahminically, and their spiritual master has arranged how they can live on charity. And he made a very nice arrangement for them. And I'm not going to discuss the details, but I could see that their spiritual master, who's also the GBC where they live, he could understand that in order for these people to do a Brahminical service, they have to have some means of livelihood. Now, it's not fixed. So one month they may get this amount, another month they get another amount. So to live like that, you have to have a certain kind of mentality. You don't know exactly what you're going to get. Or maybe this month you'll not get anything. But we should be very careful that we do provide for the people who do the sacrifices. I mean, I'd like to see arrangements in our temple where people regularly gave to the brahmacharis. Maybe you do this here, but you know, you brought the brahmacharis a dhoti or something like that. That we take care of them. So it has to be according to scripture. We have to take care of the people who facilitate our sacrifice, and then doing it for the right reason. So this is something I speak about quite a lot, and it's very relevant to the grihastha ashram. The grihastha ashram, like every other ashram, has a lot of sacrifices. Please don't think there's only sacrifices in the grihastha ashram. Every ashram has its sacrifices, as explained in chapter 4 of the Bhagavad Gita. But why are we doing the sacrifices? Why are you cleaning your house? Why are you earning the money? Why are you speaking sweetly to your wife? You do speak sweetly to your wife, right? Yes? Even when you don't feel like it. You know, they've done research that if you're angry at your spouse, if you add some word of endearment, then you're much more likely to have a happy marriage. Honey, why did you not do that right? You know? They have research like that. If you add some affectionate word. So why are we trying to treat our spouse nicely? As a matter of duty, because it's in the Shastra. Not thinking, oh, if I'm nice to my husband, then he'll take better care of me. Then he'll want to spend time with me. Then he'll love me. Oh, if I take care of my wife nicely, then when I come home from work, she'll say, oh, you're home. No, that's the motive passion. That I'm doing something then to get some personal result for myself. And when I don't get that result, then I become
disappointed.
Frustrated, disappointed, angry, sad. Right? But no, I'm doing this because this is my duty. What is the result I'm looking for? The Krishna is pleased. The Krishna is pleased. My wife may be pleased, she may not be pleased. My husband may be pleased, he may not be pleased. Your husband will not always be pleased. Guaranteed. Wife will not always be pleased. Absolutely. Children will not always be pleased. If you have two or more children, you'll do something and one child will be pleased, the other child will not be pleased. So if that's why we're doing it, that's the mode of passion. If we're doing it, that this is what it says in the Shastra. Shastra says I should clean my house. Shastra says I should maintain my family. And who's given the Shastra? Krishna. So to make Krishna happy. Just doing that thing clears the modes from you. And when you're in the mode of goodness, you feel happy and illuminated. Okay, austerity. So in goodness, there's three levels of austerity, of the body, of the words, of the mind. Now again, we see the mode of passion. The mode of passion, the austerities may not be very different, but again, the mood is different. I'm serving my parents, so everybody will say, oh, what an honorable man that is. What a diligent son. What a truthful, diligent son. And the mode of goodness, you're serving your parents because Krishna tells you to serve your parents. And you want to make Krishna happy. In ignorance, you're doing the wrong thing. You're doing foolish austerities. You're risking your life to buy drugs or something like that. You know, the thieves, they also do austerities. It's very austere being a thief. But you're doing the wrong kind of austerities for the wrong reasons. So we're going to look at the mode of goodness, austerity, a little bit more depth. So austerity of the body, worshipping Krishna, the brahmanas, guru, the parents, being clean. Prabhupada wanted us to have summit cleanliness, top cleanliness. And not only private space, public space. Now you see many people, their home is very clean, and walk one step out the door and it's a dump. It's just this one big rubbish bin. So cleanliness, everything's Krishna's, not this is my house, so I'll keep it clean. Then you're not keeping it clean for Krishna, you're keeping it clean for yourself. So my house, everywhere I go, Prabhupada says a brahmana should leave a place cleaner than when they found it. If I stay someplace, I make sure it's clean when I leave. Very simplicity. Keeping your life as simple as possible, not making your life overly complicated. Nonviolence doesn't just mean you don't hit people. It certainly means you don't hit people. So if anyone here is beating their wife or beating their husband, please stop. Okay?
This yesterday's newspaper, one of the Indian ambassadors was sent back from America to India because he was beating his wife.
I see. So, wife is the person you should protect.
Yeah, some say that Prabhupada said you can beat your wife and mridanga.
Yes, but maybe you may say that he said that, but if a woman went to Prabhupada and said, my wife is beating me, he'd say, you leave your husband. If my husband's beating me, he'd say, you leave your husband. Actually, what Prabhupada said is that in civilized society, it goes to a court case. He said some people, they don't care for civilized society. That's what he said. Prabhupada said some people will say, you beat your wife like a drum, but in a civilized society, it's a court case. He said, of course, sometimes in the villages, they don't care for civilized life. But if the person who's your shelter is the person who's supposed to be your shelter, if that person is hurting you, then where's your shelter? If the police officer is a criminal, where's your shelter? So if your husband is cruel to you, how can you survive? So no physical violence. Physical violence should be only in extreme circumstances. And no mental violence. No mental and emotional cruelty to anybody. We shouldn't be cruel. We shouldn't be, you know. So I sometimes think in ISKCON we talk about being kind to the cows. We're so kind to the cows. And then we're not kind to our own family members. We're more kind to the animals. Well, be a vegetarian and be nonviolent. And then we're insulting our family members, calling them ill names. That's also a kind of violence. So violence means to cause grief to someone else. So we may have to correct our family members, but not in a way that causes them grief and pain. We don't have the right to do that. And whatever pain we cause others will come back to us. I'm sorry. The law of karma also applies to us. It's not just something for the karmis. If you even want to hurt somebody, you will be hurt. What to speak of if you hurt somebody? And often the people we hurt the most are the people that we live with. So nonviolence. And you can do that. You can make a determination that even when I'm angry, I'm not going to say or do anything that the next day I will regret. Anger is not an excuse for saying terrible things or doing terrible things. So the people that we live with, they're our service to Krishna. They're our service to Krishna. You know, we're so kind to the guests who come to the temple, and so we should be at least as kind to our family members. Of course, it's hard because we're thinking, my family member is here for my pleasure. My wife is here for my pleasure. My husband's here for my pleasure. My children are here for my pleasure. So when they don't please us, we become angry. And we want to punish them. But a little secret, our family members are not here for our pleasure. They're here for Krishna's pleasure. And we're meant to serve them. Now, sometimes we have to serve someone by correcting them or instructing them. One way you serve your children is by educating them and correcting them. You don't just serve your children by washing their feet. But out of love, not out of anger and frustration, and not in a way that they're harmed. Otherwise, it's not the mode of goodness. And my dear friends, if we're not in the mode of goodness, we're not going to see Krishna. We can say, I'm a devotee, I'm chanting my rounds. But if we go home and tell our wife, you're a demon, you're not going to see Krishna. It just won't happen. Especially if our family are also Vaishnavas, then guess what? That's also Vaishnava Aparad. So we should be kind to everyone. We should be kind to our family. We should be kind to our ISKCON leaders. You know, because we're all envious of Krishna, we tend to be envious and critical of anybody who's in a position of authority. So I find in ISKCON many times there's criticism of the leaders. Oh, the GBC this, the town president this. Oh, be kind to the people who've taken responsibility. It's hard to take responsibility. It's not easy. Always give people the benefit of the doubt. Treat others the way we want to be treated. So, just cannot emphasize how important this is. Without jiva doya, without kindness to other living entities, entering into Vrindavan is impossible. Believe me, there is no wife beating in Golok Vrindavan. Nobody is, you know, screaming curse words and insults at each other. It's not happening. There's no entrance in Vaikuntha for such a mentality. So it's not just chanting Hare Krishna. Then celibacy, of course, celibacy means either complete celibacy or using the sex life to produce nice children. That's also a kind of celibacy. So Prabhupada would say that, and of course that's in the Manu Samhita. And produce nice children. Now there's propaganda all over the world, but especially in places like India and China. Only have one child. I saw so many signs coming here. Only have one child. So most people cannot restrict their sex life to only having one child. Some people can. Most people cannot. And then they're going to do all kinds of cheating. So we'll not get into details in a public forum. But people do all kinds of cheating. So better to be an honest person Krishna is the supreme truth. The mode of goodness is truth. Be truthful. Be truthful. It's not unusual that people have sexual desires. That's nothing strange. It's like it's not unusual that we're hungry. We don't have to feel bad. Oh, I want to eat. Oh no, I'm a terrible person. So there's nothing terrible with having sex desire if you use it as yajna. Just like we eat as yajna. We take nice food, we offer it to Krishna, and we eat as yajna. So sex life also can be used as yajna. That's one of the yajnas. And in this yajna, one can see Krishna. Just like in prasadam, one can see Krishna. But it should be used for that purpose. So be honest. Be honest. Don't be afraid. How will I maintain so many? Krishna, if they're good children, Krishna will maintain them. He'll help you. And we want so many Krishna conscious children. We're not worried about overpopulation of devotees. Can you imagine, you know, if you say, no, we're not going to build a bigger temple because then more people will come. I think get rid of this bigger building, just have a small building. Can you imagine we complain? Oh no, 500 guests came for the Sunday program. It's terrible. We should have a sign telling them to go away. So we don't mind having thousands and thousands of Krishna conscious children. What we don't want is an overpopulation of unwanted children, neglected children, demon children. When there's an overpopulation of unwanted children, then the earth doesn't produce. But, you know, statistically speaking, there's enough room in the state of Texas in America for the whole population of the world. And the land could feed 10 times the population of the world. An unhealthy diet. What to speak of a healthy vegetarian diet? So this whole idea of overpopulation is basically government mismanagement and greed. So to use sex life that way is glorious. If the husband and wife have love and affection for each other, and they're offering their relationship to Krishna, and they're producing children that they're going to love and care for, that is a very glorious thing. And to just be artificially repressed and angry, or to engage in unnatural, sinful behaviors, that will not help anybody go back to Godhead. It's much better to have 15 children that you raise as devotees than to do something artificial and unnatural, to go against the truth of the body. So these are difficult things to discuss in public, but I think somebody needs to talk about them sometimes. I hope you don't mind. Is that all right?
Yes.
That we're talking about this?
Yes.
Okay. Because we want to approach the absolute truth, so we have to live in truth. Everything should be according to how Krishna's designed it. So this body is designed in a particular way. And by doing unnatural behaviors, then you're trying to change the way Krishna has designed the body. Just like some people have an eating disorder. They eat a lot and then they vomit. Or people now eat food that's not food. I remember we saw a sign years ago on my oldest son, I think he was about 8 years old then, it was a sign for a soda. It said, drink this just for the taste of it. And he said, oh, Mata, it's not real food, just taste. So people, they don't want to get fat, but they want to eat. So they make food with no calories. If there's no calories, it's not food. Fake food. And then they get so many diseases. So if people want to enjoy sexual behavior, but they don't want the yajna of raising the children, then they have fake sex. And then they get so many psychological problems, so much marital discord, and so much inner turmoil. So that's not the way. That's not the way. The ultimate cure, you know what the ultimate cure for sex desire is? Now why Krishna consciousness? Do you know what the original form of our sex desire is? So this is in Madhya Leela, chapter 8, text 138, and it's in Srimad Bhagavatam, canto 5, chapter 25, text 5. And I give a whole seminar on this topic, so this is going to be very brief. But the original form of our sex desire is seeing Sita and Ram together, seeing Narayan and Lakshmi together, seeing Radha and Krishna together, bringing the ultimate male and the ultimate female together. And because we're part of Krishna, when we bring Krishna together with his pleasure potency, we also feel satisfied. That's the original form of sexual desire. So guess how we bring together Krishna and Radharani? We do it all the time. How do we do that? What do we do every day that brings together Radha and Krishna? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama. Therefore, chanting Hare Krishna is the greatest service. You're bringing together Radha and Krishna. Hanuman did the greatest service, right? Finding where Sita was. So therefore, if you really chant with attention, then you lose interest in material sex desire. It's not interesting anymore. Trying to imitate Krishna on the platform of the body, which is a really, it's really disgusting, this body. That's no longer satisfying when you have the real thing. But if you don't have the real thing, you go for the false thing. We cannot live. This is part of our philosophy, right? You cannot live without desire. You have to get the Parandrista Nivartita. So the ultimate cure for sex life is one must find satisfaction in pleasing Krishna. Pleasing Krishna means bringing Krishna together with his Ladini Shakti. As soon as you say, I'm pleasing Krishna, then that means Lakshmi or Radharani or Sita must be involved because they're the Ladini Shakti. So that we get our pleasure from pleasing Krishna. And you can say, well, I can't do that immediately. I can't do that just tomorrow. I'm going to get all my pleasure. Of course, we could. But generally, it takes time. So what do you do in the meantime? In the meantime, for most of us, there's the Grihastha Ashram. Okay. So while you're working on the ultimate solution, you have your one wife, your one husband, and you raise nice children. So without that, or complete brahmacharya life, sattva gun will not be obtained. Therefore, in every yoga system, there is control of sexual desire. Without that, there's no question. Unless there's some very strange mercy you get from Krishna. It won't happen. So be honest. Honesty is a wonderful thing. To honestly need something for my material desire is fine, as long as I'm within the shastra. To be a cheater, nobody likes a cheater. Would anybody like a cheater? Yeah. Krishna doesn't like that either. All right. Austerity of speech, we talked about this a lot the other day, so I'm not going to discuss this now. But the most important one here is?
Beneficial.
Okay. So I have a whole discussion here again. I'm not going to really discuss it now. But I really like this quote. That harsh speech is more painful than arrows. Okay, that's part of the elements of non-violence, is making sure we don't harm others by our speech. We often remember for many, many years some harsh speech that somebody gave us, especially somebody that we care about. Okay, of the mind, to be satisfied. Krishna's taking care of me, and whatever he does for me must be good. I'm satisfied. Krishna gives me a lot of money. Okay, I'm satisfied. I'll use it in his service. He doesn't give me a lot of money. Okay. Then I have to live more simply. He gives me very nice food that I like. He gives me my favorite food. Oh, thank you, Krishna. He gives me all food I don't like. Okay. Krishna wants me to do some tapasya. He surrounds me with pleasant people that are easy to get along with. Okay, very nice. He surrounds me with very difficult people that really challenge me and make me work on patience and forgiveness and charity. Okay, that's his... whatever situation, I'm satisfied. Okay, so here we're looking a little bit again about body, mind, and words. So the body is the easiest. Right? The speech is hardest, and hardest is the mind. And when one is steady in all of these, that is one of the symptoms of nishta. Prabhupada says that Krishna consciousness is a hard struggle with determination until we achieve nishta, and then everything comes automatically. If you want to get to the stage where Krishna consciousness is more easy and automatic, then one must perform these austerities of the body, mind, and words. Okay, charity. Charity doesn't just mean money. Charity means anything you give. You give your time. You give your intelligence. You give your home. Give your talents. Now notice again that in goodness and passion, externally it's almost the same. Externally it's almost the same. The difference is in the mood. Now this is something that I wish that everyone in ISKCON would understand. Charity in the mode of goodness. Charity in the mode of goodness is given willingly. And charity in the mode of ignorance, that's easy to understand.
Here's some donation.
Right, give you a donation when you're in the toilet room or without any respect or to the wrong person. Right, that's easy to understand. Passion and goodness is a little harder. Prabhupada says out of obligation. Someone says you really should give that money, you know. And so you give it and you don't want to give it. You think, well, I don't want to do that. Charity in the mode of goodness. Your heart wants to give, and you give happily. So it's very, very important both that the charity we give is in the mode of goodness, and that the only charity we encourage others to give is in the mode of goodness. So if we're going to look back here for a minute at the mode of passion, you know, if when people give charity, we put up their name and we make a big... We're encouraging charity in the mode of passion. If we try to pressure people to give, that's charity in the mode of passion. People should give because they want to give. And you know, if we encourage people to give from the mode of goodness, then they'll feel spiritually enlivened by giving. And then you know what? They're likely to give more. When you pressure people to give, maybe you'll get a lot right now, then later on you won't. So our process for getting people to donate to ISKCON projects should also be in line with our philosophy. Not only what the money is used for or what the time is used for, but how we ask people to give. On what basis do we ask people to give? The whole process should be in the mode of goodness. The whole process should be transcendental. Not as long as it's being used for Krishna, it's okay. So renunciation. So renunciation. So a lot of times people say, oh, too much trouble. I'm so spiritual, I only make khichdi for my husband. But actually the real reason is it's too much trouble. I don't want to go through any trouble. So renunciation in the mode of goodness is I'm doing what I'm supposed to do because it's what I'm supposed to do it. And I'm not, my pleasure isn't coming from the fruits. My pleasure is coming from pleasing Krishna. That's renunciation. Renunciation isn't necessarily that I walk away from an activity. Could be, if the activity is sinful or against the Shastra. But Arjuna said, let me walk away from the battle. Krishna says, no, walk away from your ahankar. Okay, understanding and goodness, as we were saying in the beginning, you know what choices to make. You know, this will bring me happiness and this will bring me distress. Isn't that awful when we don't know? We have choices in life and we have no idea what the result of our choices will be. We're choosing blindly or semi-blindly. So in the mode of goodness, you can see the result. I know what's scary, what's dangerous, what's not. In the mode of passion, sometimes I get it right, sometimes I get it wrong. In the mode of ignorance, I get it backwards. I have everything backwards. I think religion is irreligion, and irreligion is religion. You know, like some Christians who think it's irreligion to worship the deity, or it's irreligion to be vegetarian. So when you're in the mode of goodness, you see that everyone's a soul. Vijayavanaya sampane brahmani gavi hastini suni chagasupakecha pandita samadarshinha. When you're in the mode of passion, you think, okay, that's an Indian, that's an African, that's a dog, that's an elk. You think that's actually what they are. And the mode of ignorance, all you know is your work. I know how to do accounting, and I come home and watch television and go to sleep. You know, you don't even think about anything else. We see very much this knowledge in the mode of passion in modern society. This group has to have their rights, and this group has to have their rights, and this multicultural thing, and this multicultural thing, and everyone is their body. So here's knowledge and goodness. We see the soul and the super soul within everyone. Okay, action. So action in the mode of goodness. I'm relishing my relationship with Krishna. I do action from the Shastra, and I'm not getting my happiness from the result. I'm not attached to a particular result. I'm not doing this because I think by doing this I'll get such and such result. I'm doing this just because it's my duty and I want Krishna to be pleased with me. And that's my happiness. That's my happiness. I go out and distribute books. If anyone buys a book or not, what's happened with the... I've tried to please Guru and Krishna by distributing a book. Whether they buy or not, it's not under my control. My attachment is to Krishna. I neither love my work nor hate my work. I love my relationship with Krishna. In passion, I may be doing the same work, but my effort is to satisfy my own senses. And I'll work very hard to satisfy my own senses. In ignorance, I just do something that's not in the Shastra. I don't care. I don't care. I don't care what the result will be. Oh, my husband and I are fighting a lot, so let's separate. Who cares what the result is? So we have a child. Who cares? Doesn't matter. And I don't think what will happen to me, what will happen to the society. So in goodness, one does one's duty because I'm a servant of Krishna. And here you notice with great determination and enthusiasm. Sometimes people think that mode of passion means enthusiasm. That a person in the mode of goodness is just Om Shanti. I have heard people say in our International Society for Krishna Consciousness, sitting on the Vyasa Sangha, well, I'm a Brahmana because I never do any work. I've heard people say that. Laziness is not in the mode of goodness, it's in the mode of passion. A person in the goodness has great enthusiasm, but not for the fruit. They have great enthusiasm to please Krishna. They have great enthusiasm to follow the Shastra. There's so much enthusiasm that they don't waver even if there's failure. You're trying to build a temple for Krishna. You know, you might fail, but you don't give up. You don't give up being a devotee. You don't say, well, we failed to build this temple. Forget this Krishna consciousness. I failed to distribute any books. Forget this Krishna consciousness. I cooked a nice meal. My husband still isn't happy. Forget this Krishna consciousness. Doesn't matter. Whether you're a failure or whether you're a success, that's up to Krishna. And you still go on doing your duty. That's real enthusiasm. The person in the mode of passion, they're only enthusiastic working for a particular result. And they don't get the result they want. Guess what happens to their enthusiasm? Finished. Person in the mode of passion, they'll work very, very hard thinking, I'm going to get this. And when it doesn't happen, they become depressed or angry. Person in the mode of ignorance, they're following the Shastra. Person in the mode of passion is following the Shastra, but for their own personal gain. In the mode of ignorance, they're just doing whatever they want. And they're cheating. They want to take shortcuts. Both in passion and goodness, they're not taking shortcuts. They're following the rules. They're doing it right. In the mode of ignorance, they want to cheat. So any time there's cheating or shortcuts, that's the mode of ignorance. Let me get some pleasure without sacrifice. In passion, a person is willing to sacrifice. An expert in insulting others. Oh, does this happen in modern society?
No need to pick any course.
What?
No need to go to a university to study this, how to insult others.
Yes, exactly. So many entertainers, they make their living by being expert in insulting others. That's people's idea of comedy nowadays. they'll see some comedian who just stands up and insults others. And always procrastinate. Oh, this is too hard. I'll chant attentive rounds tomorrow. I'll clean my house tomorrow. I'll wash my dishes tomorrow. Prabhupada said they'll put off for years what can be done in 1 hour. So in order to see if we can have so much energy and enthusiasm for our devotional service. So just seeing goodness, one's determination is unbreakable. The person in goodness is not lazy. Unbreakable, because they're working for Krishna. Krishna's always there. And they control their mind, their life, and their senses. In passion, their determination is for themselves, for some material thing. And in ignorance, their only determination is planning and dreaming and lamenting. They're very determined to lament. Oh, this didn't happen. If only my town president had done this. If only I had done that. Why did I spend that money? Why did I do this? Why did I marry this person? Why did I move to this place? Oh, someday I'll do something wonderful. Okay, happiness. Happiness in the mode of goodness. At first it seems very difficult. I'm going to work for Krishna, not for me? Oh, awful. What about me? What's going to happen to me? I'm going to work whether there's success or failure, but then there might be failure. Oh no. I have to control my mind and my senses. I can't just cheat. Oh, that's terrible. But you become really, really happy. And you get genuine, lasting happiness. And then it awakens you to spiritual happiness. In the mode of passion, it's very nice in the beginning. And it turns bitter. Material relationships are generally in the mode of passion. Oh, we're in love, and then a little later, oh, we're not in love anymore. And ignorance is just always miserable. There's never any real happiness. It's all imagined. So here we have some more description. Can you all read English? I don't like reading PowerPoint slides. So in goodness, there's some genuine happiness. In passion, there's some idea of happiness. And in ignorance, there's not even an idea of happiness. It's just misery. Okay, the qualities of one who's in the mode of goodness. Especially this honesty. Honesty doesn't just mean telling the truth. It means that our lie doesn't just mean I don't steal. It also means I'm honest about where I am in Krishna consciousness. I engage myself according to my level of realization. I engage myself according to my type and level of material desires. I'm not a phony. I don't try to be something that I'm not. Now that doesn't mean you say, well, I'm going to honestly be in Maya. It means you honestly take the proper medicine for who and what you are. Okay, Shivara Maharaj has a wonderful book, Sudha Bhakti Chintamani, where he outlines the steps in Krishna consciousness. And he wrote something really wonderful, so I'm going to make an exception to my general principle. I am going to read this. He says, before devotees attain steadiness, the presence of abundant unwanted habits makes them lightning rods for the modes of passion and ignorance. Awake or asleep, such devotees are easy targets. When passion predominates, they feel sexually disturbed and therefore humiliated. When goodness defeats passion, they find themselves hoping for imminent deliverance from material life. But when ignorance defeats goodness and passion, such devotees despair. Until most of their bad habits leave the heart, devotees are unable to become steady in their spiritual life, no matter how hard they try. This summarizes a relatively unfulfilling state of unsteady devotional service. So I hear this question over and over again all over the world. How can I maintain my enthusiasm? How can I maintain my steadiness? I hear something, I feel enlivened, and an hour later I've forgotten it. I decide one day I'm going to chant with attention, and, you know, half an hour later, I don't even, you know, it's like you're driving and all of a sudden you're at your destination, you don't know how you got there. So all of a sudden you chant your 16 rounds, you don't remember chanting any of them. You know, it's unsteady, the termination is unsteady. The reason for the unsteadiness is I'm maintaining passion ignorance, and the reason I'm maintaining passion ignorance is because I want to. Because without passion ignorance, I can't fulfill my material desires. But as unwanted habits leave the heart, passion ignorance decrease proportionally, and the mode of goodness becomes increasingly dominant. The five obstacles, sleep, distraction, indifference, the inclination to sin, and the thirst for sense enjoyment, dwindle to insignificance, and devotees finally achieve steadiness. Unlike the lower modes, goodness is conducive to spiritual life. In a spiritually enlivened state, devotees then become happy. So in this state, spiritual life becomes easy. It's no longer a struggle. And here's, of course, the famous Bhagavatam verse. As soon as irrevocable loving service is established in the heart, the effects of nature's modes of passion, ignorance, such as lust, desire, and hankering, disappear from the heart. Then the devotee is established in goodness and he becomes completely happy. So to come to goodness, we have to get rid of the unwanted dirty things in our heart. You like that picture? My cool picture. A muddy heart. So that means getting rid of our illusions. Thinking this world is a pleasurable place. Thinking that it's the religious rituals that are bringing us perfection. Thinking God is impersonal, which means also thinking God doesn't care about me. Krishna doesn't care about me. Wanting to lord it over material nature. Envy. These are the things that are attracting passion and ignorance. As long as we hold on to these things act as magnets for passion ignorance to cover us. We cannot get rid of passion ignorance if we're holding on to these things, if we like these things, if we want these things. Because we can't get these things in goodness, because these are all false things. And goodness shows you the truth. When you see the truth, you can't get these things. If you want these things, you must be covered. You must be put into illusion. Like you can't really give your child the moon. If you want to give your child, if your child insists on the moon, you have to show him a reflection of the moon. Because you can't give him the real moon. So these things are not attainable by us. They're false things. So if we want them, Krishna has to put us in illusion to get them. So these things also, these are quite, all these things, they're attracting passion and ignorance. As long as we take shelter of these things, Krishna says in the 16th chapter, Kamashrita, taking shelter of lust. If we're thinking, my greed will make me happy, my pride will make me happy, for holding on to that, then Krishna must cover us with passion ignorance, because we're really asking him to. We're saying, Lord, please put me in illusion. Does that make sense? So let's say your child says to you, I want to fly. So what will you do? You can get them a little bird costume and they can jump around in the house. Right? You can't give them real flying. If you try to give them real flying, they'll fall off the building and die. They'll be in the hospital. So you can give them illusion flying. One of my granddaughters, she used to wear these butterfly wings, like a costume, you know. I'm flying. So if we want to do crazy things, Krishna can only give us that in illusion. These things are not available in reality. In reality, there's no lust, anger, greed, illusion, pride. They just don't exist. If we want them, we have to be in illusion. Illusion means passion and ignorance. So if we're holding on to these things, if we're afraid to give them up, and that's why we're holding on to them, because we're afraid to give them up, then we're begging Krishna, please cover me with passion ignorance. And then we'll never experience happiness or steadiness. Instead, we'll be overcome by these waves. And we say, well, wait a minute, everybody gets old. But when one is in the mode of goodness, one is not disturbed by old age and disease. One's not disturbed. Just the body. Sometimes we ride in a new car, sometimes we ride in an old car. As long as we get there, it's all right. So, of course, you all know the process. This is nothing new. The question is, to what extent we're going to do it both internally and externally. And the bottom one is so important. Choosing things according to Shastra and Guru and Sadhu. Making choices based on the instruction of truth. Okay, well, I hope you enjoyed this. I'm sorry we got such a late start. And we can have very brief, if anybody has any questions or comments. Anything you want to discuss? Everybody just wants to go home and go to bed?
How to maintain this steadiness always? Because we keep again and again.
This question keeps coming up. How to become steady? The only way you can become steady is by letting go of the things that are attracting passion and ignorance. It's the only way, there's just no other way to do it. Passion and ignorance are causing us to be unsteady. We are attracting, we are asking for passion and ignorance by holding on to things like lust, envy, greed, and illusion. And we are holding on to them. They are not external things that are attacking us against our will. Yes.
You know, Krishna Krishna, our society, we devotees have different levels.
Yes.
For each level, there is the leaders or authorities like that one and all. We find some chaotic conditions in all levels. So how much we can take care of these responsibilities of the leaders or authorities so that all the people in each level be happy and enthusiastic in doing the devotional service.
I'm not sure I understand your question. What do you mean by levels?
That is,
give me an example of what is a level.
The realizations of Krishna consciousness.
Okay, so there's different levels of realizations.
Yeah.
Okay.
We offer devotees that come into the temple.
Right.
The temple have their authorities.
Okay.
So how much responsible the leaders of the temple should take over the new faiths so that they will always be steady, what you are now, they are telling us.
Neophytes can't be steady, by definition. The definition of a neophyte, you know the Sanskrit word for neophyte is what? Ka nista, that means not steady. Nista means steady, ka nista, not steady. So the neophyte, if the neophyte's steady, they're not a neophyte.
Responsibility.
So you cannot take responsibility to make the kanista steady. It's impossible. You can take responsibility to give the neophyte good instruction and good opportunity to come to the platform of steadiness. But if someone's under the control of passion and ignorance, you can't artificially make, you know, I can't take him and just say, okay, grow up right now. Doesn't work. You can't do it for yourself either. You ever tried that? Okay, Urmila, become advanced now. I tried that a few times, yeah. It just didn't really work very well. Okay, right now I'm going to be humble. Yes, I'm going to do it. You ever tried that? Anybody ever tried that? Doesn't work. At least it hasn't worked for me. If it's worked for you, maybe afterwards you can tell me your secret.
The fruits of action that lives.
Anyway, all of us should take responsibility to help each other, not only the leaders. And we should especially take we should all take responsibility to help each other. And we have different relationships with people. Some people are more advanced than us, some are the same, some than less. And somebody may be more advanced than us in one way, less advanced in another way. Maybe there's a devotee who's more advanced than I am at respecting prasadam, but less advanced than I am in deity worship. So in deity worship I can help them, in prasadam they can help me. And we should try to take care of each other, but let's first also take care of ourselves. And then you can also only help somebody as much as they're willing to be helped. I'm not sure if that answers your question. Does that answer your question?
To some extent.
Or maybe it's being that the leaders must set example.
Everybody should set an example. Why only the leaders?
Everyone is leader to their loyal.
Everyone's a leader to someone. It's not that, well, I'm not a leader, I can just, you know, lie and cheat and steal. And should all try to set an example. Set an example, at least for the society in general.
Why is it always we feel like comparing ourselves with others? The comparative mood is always existing, and that makes us...
Well, to some extent, we should compare ourselves with others. Otherwise, how can you follow Rupa Goswami's instruction?
Comparing in a positive way is good. Like, we always compare and think, I should have been better than him, and he should...
Prabhupada says competition brings life. I mean, you can't follow Rupa Goswami's instruction about whom to associate with if you don't compare yourself with others. Impossible. And in Goloka Vrindavan, there's also hierarchies. You know, so this idea of hierarchy is something that's real. The problem is when we compare ourselves with others to criticize. So if you want to say, how can you get rid of criticism? So then you have to look at why we criticize. That's a whole discussion. What motivates us to criticize? Probably so we can feel good about ourselves. If you want to feel good about yourself, just think how you're a soul and you're part of Krishna. And how Krishna loves you. There are other reasons why we criticize. We criticize because we don't want to be naive, we don't want to be cheated. But you can be intelligent without being critical. I can notice, oh, that person is not so honest, so I probably don't want to associate with them. But I don't have to feel envious and that I'm better than they are. I'm not better than anybody. We're all souls. Being completely free of the propensity to criticize others is a symptom of the Uttama Bhakta. So it's a very difficult thing to do, but at least we should make some effort. At least we shouldn't speak criticism. That's a very difficult thing to do. Burjan Prabhu says that one time at Kartik he took a vow that this month I won't criticize anyone. He said he couldn't keep it for 2 hours. So one Kartik I decided, well, I'm going to try that. I'm really a fool, you know. So I thought, okay, Burjan couldn't do it, but I'm going to do it, you know. You know what happened to me? I became aware of how critical I am. I said, okay, I'm not going to criticize anyone. And all of a sudden, I became aware that I was thinking something critical, you know, like 5 times an hour about something. It was really overwhelming. It's like, wow, I'm really critical. So that to be free of the propensity to be free of even an inclination to criticize others. So that's a symptom of the Uttama. At least we should be aiming for that. Trying our best, step by step, to get free of this. It's such a nasty thing. Such a nasty thing.
sometimes we used to think every morning after Mangalarti we read the 10 references to the best from the devotees. Most of the time we just meditate or sometimes actually we criticize.
Yeah. It's very hard. Can we take one more from anybody? Any last thing? Yes.
Sometimes during the Grihastha devotees we find that the husband and the wife both are very good as a devotee. And they want to do a lot of services to the temple and others whenever they get involved on the devotee. But something stops them in their interpersonal relationship. They don't gel well together as husband and wife. So like you were saying, that everything we should see according to the Shastras. So what the Shastras say for this? Can we separate and continue their services? Or?
Only in very extreme situations. So Prabhupada talked about separation, you know, if one of the members is crazy or very violent. You know, if somebody's running after you with an axe, you probably should live in another place. Some people don't do that, you know. Some people will stay. Oh, it's my dharma, I have to stay. It's like, it's not your dharma to get your head split open with an axe. So if it's very serious. There may be some very serious reasons. But it should be only for very serious things. You know, Prabhupada said that the purpose of the dowry... Do you know what he said the purpose of the dowry is? Prabhupada said the dowry was the girl's inheritance from her family. She didn't get an inheritance when the parents died. She got her inheritance at her time of marriage. And he said that dowry belongs to the woman and her daughters. So the husband cannot touch it. And he said the purpose of the dowry is if there's some difficulty, she has some wealth. So if the husband dies, or if the husband leaves her, or if he goes crazy, she's not left destitute. So the Vedic society provided some safety net for very difficult situations. So there may be a very difficult situation. I know of one man whose wife started bringing other men home to the house. First she was seeing other men, and he thought, well, I'll tolerate. And then she started bringing the men home and introducing to the children. He said, that's enough, I'm gone. So there are some serious circumstances in which separation is the dharmic thing to do, but not just for fighting. I mean, you know, even Shiva and Parvati fight. That's...
Even Rukmini and Krishna.
Rukmini and Krishna. What to speak of Satyabhama and Krishna. And they also fight.
So what is the underlying principle of unity?
This is my service. This is my service to Krishna. And sometimes you may want to take some material solution. There's many good books about married life. There's good courses. You can ask some counseling from senior grihasthas, and you open your heart to them. And you know, we're not opposed to material solutions. If you cut your finger, you can put on a bandage. You don't have to just chant Hare Krishna to the blood. You know, so people can learn relationship skills, especially if your parents didn't have good relationship skills. Maybe you can learn something. But you see, Krishna has put me in this situation for some reason. Krishna wants me to learn something. Krishna wants me to develop something. It's interesting, we have the example of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He had a very happy family life. We have Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati, who was Nastiki Brahmachari, and we had Prabhupada, who had a difficult family life. So we have those three contemporary examples. So we saw that Srila Prabhupada was very dutiful. He cared about his wife. It wasn't that he didn't care about her, but he said, I never really liked her. He said, she wasn't a bad person. But he said, I just never really liked her. Well, sometimes that happens. And his father said, well, it will be easier for you later to be renounced. Take it as a benediction. So he did. And he was a dutiful householder. He was a household life till he was 54. He waited till his children had grown up. No, he wasn't irresponsible. And later on, Prabhupada made sure there was money even sent for his wife and children. So that's it. Some lesson from Krishna. Krishna's trying to teach me something. Whatever it may be, whether it's a difficult spouse or a difficult child or difficulty with health or difficulty with money. Is there anyone here that has a life with absolutely no obstacles? Anybody? So, you know, we tend to think that my obstacle is so terrible. But everybody has some obstacle. Also, you focus on what's good in your life. I was counseling one family, and the wife was saying, my husband never supports my Krishna consciousness. And I said, is he vegetarian? Yes. I said, does he like home-cooked food? Yes. Does he always make sure the food is offered? Yes. I said, well, that's a very big support. But she wasn't seeing that. She was just seeing that he didn't want to wake up early, and he wasn't helping the children to wake up early. She was focusing on what he was doing wrong instead of focusing on what he was doing right. She didn't even see what he was doing right. When I was talking to her about food, she was silent for a long time. She said, yes, you know, he does that. I said, well, you're taking that for granted. Said, not all husbands do that. Many husbands will just order out from Pizza Hut and buy their children junk, sodas and potato chips. And I'm sorry if I'm offending anybody. I said, so the fact that he really supports giving your children nice prasadam, that's a big thing. So try to see what's good in the other person. Everybody has some good. And then remember that you're not great either, you know. I mean, I tend to think, oh, I'm so wonderful, anybody would like to live with me. You know, my husband, he should overlook all of my faults because they're not very important. He should see all of my wonderful good qualities. You know, I may be doing things that drive my husband nuts, too. My poor husband, you know. I mean, he may have to be tolerating a lot. To see others as we want to be seen. See the good, focus on the good in others. And see how Krishna's arranged this for some lesson for me, something he wants me to learn. Maybe he wants me to learn compassion. Maybe he wants me to learn patience. You know, I'm so critical of my spouse, but if it's so difficult for me to be tolerant and patient and loving, then that's at least as big of a fault as whatever fault my spouse has. Do you all understand what I just said? So I'm saying, you have this problem, you have this problem, you have this, and I'm always yelling at you. I can't control my tongue, how I'm yelling at you. I can't control my mind. I'm never satisfied. So then my problem is as bad as your problem. Okay. Running away from our duty is not, that was what Arjuna wanted to do. He said, this is a painful battle, let me run away. That's renunciation in the mode of passion, ignorance. Renunciation in the mode of goodness is I do my duty to please Krishna. The main reason we suffer in family life is we're thinking this family life is for my enjoyment and this other person isn't being Krishna for me. This other person isn't fulfilling all of my desires. You know, but they can't be Krishna for you. It's not. It's like going to a shoe store and complaining that they don't have any apples. You know, my husband, my wife, my children, they're not going to fulfill all my desires. They're not going to perfectly understand my heart. That's Krishna. So understand at least that's the real, at least theoretically understand that that's the real problem. This is not my husband. Krishna is my husband. This is my service. It's not my wife. My service. It's not my children. My wife belongs to Krishna. My husband belongs to Krishna. My children belong to Krishna. Krishna, you're my everything. Janaka janani daita tanai prabhu guru pati tuhu sarvamoni. You're everything. Whatever I want from a husband, from a wife, from children, from parents, that I find in Krishna. I'm not going to find it in another jiva. And when I find it in Krishna, then you know what? Then I can actually love other jivas. Because then I don't want anything from them, then I can love. If I want something from you, I can't love. I'm exploiting. So that's the only real solution. But you can also take counseling courses, mentoring. These things are also very helpful. We're not denying that. But the real solution is I have to find all of my satisfaction in Krishna. If I've already eaten a full meal, whether you feed me or not doesn't matter anymore. If I'm getting my satisfaction from Krishna, then if my wife doesn't speak sweetly to me, I'm not going to be angry. I may instruct her and say, you know, my dear wife, it says in the Shastra you should speak sweetly to your husband. It would really be good for you if you did it. For me, I'm getting my satisfaction from Krishna. If you speak sweetly to me or harshly to me, Krishna is always speaking sweetly to me, so it doesn't matter. But it's not good for you to speak harshly to me. I don't think it's going to help you in your spiritual life. Maybe you want to think about it a little bit. So that's a very different kind of thing. My dear husband, you know, you never spend any time with me. And Krishna's spending time with me, so it's okay. I get to spend time with Krishna. Every day I spend, you know, 3 or 4 hours with Krishna. He's the best husband, but that's, you know, your duty. Prabhupada says your duty is to take care of your wife. Not doing your duty, it's not going to be good for you. It's not going to help you if you neglect me like this. Krishna won't be pleased with you. I mean, I'll find my satisfaction in Krishna, but it's not... You don't have to say that, but that should be the mood. That's your mood. Not, why don't you spend time with me? What time with you? You know. Does that make sense? That's the only ultimate solution to all our human relationships. So at least you can practice. And don't say, oh, Armila, that's for the advanced devotees. We're all advanced devotees. We're just covered. We're all pure devotees. We're just dirty pure devotees. We're all diamonds. We just have some smelly stuff. So start acting like we are and it will come. Okay, it's getting very late. I'm getting tired. It's a long way to get back. Thank you. There's even prasadam for those of you who can stay up to eat prasadam. I'm going to go back and go to bed. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.